A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these performing arts organizations. Today, I'll check back in on the progress of The Orchestra Now, a master's program at Bard College launched 3 years ago that provides young musicians the rigorous experience of performing in a professional-level orchestra and the opportunity to create their own approaches to developing new ensembles and audiences. My guests will be Leon Botstein, Bard College president and music director of The Orchestra Now, and four of the musicians who have participated in the program. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. George Walker, the first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize for Music, has passed away. According to NPR, Walker died at Mountainside Hospital in Montclair, New Jersey, following a fall. Born in Washington, D.C., Walker studied piano at Oberlin Conservatory and went on to study piano with Rudolf Serkin and composition with Samuel Barber at the Curtis Institute of Music, becoming one of the Institute's first Black graduates. As a pianist, he performed with the Philadelphia Orchestra after winning its Philadelphia Youth Auditions, also marking another first as the first Black instrumentalist to perform with the orchestra. He later earned his doctorate from the University of Rochester's Eastman School of Music. Awarded a Fulbright scholarship, he studied in Paris with Nadia Boulanger. His work Lilac was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in 1996. In addition, he held numerous teaching positions, including serving on the faculty at the Peabody Institute, the University of Delaware, and Rutgers University, where he served as chairman of the music department. According to NPR, his son said he was still working on commissions at the time of his death. Walker was 96. In another loss for the Eastman School of Music, the Rochester University community is mourning the passing of Paul Burgett, an Eastman graduate who went on to serve as vice president and dean of the university. Burgett studied violin at Eastman, graduating in 1968, and then returned for his master's and doctorate, for which he studied the music of Black classical composers, a theme he supported throughout his career. He was named dean of students at Eastman in 1981, moving on to the same position at the university-wide level after 7 years. In 2001, he was named vice president of the university. Burgett was 72. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. As the classical music world experiments with and explores new routes to expand repertoire and audiences, young musicians have become key allies in creating some of the new ways that music can reach and inspire people and communities. Among some of the innovations coming from music schools and conservatories is Bard College's master's program called The Orchestra Now, or TONE. Throughout the year, students prepare, rehearse, and perform much as they would in a professional orchestra, with a repertoire that includes a variety of new compositions and lesser-known works. TONE performs at Bard's Fisher Center, Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater, and Carnegie Hall, and also presents a series of concerts at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in which the music reflects or connects in some way with the artwork on display. The program also includes training in speaking to the audience, designing innovative programming, and working with schools and other music education programs. As part of their third year, students work on a capstone project, such as creating and managing a new ensemble, festival, or educational program that they might be able to continue once they have graduated. Having launched in 2015, TONE just graduated its first class of students, so it seemed like a good time to check back in. The orchestra was performing as part of the annual Bard Music Festival earlier this month, dedicated this year to Rimsky-Korsakov and his world, so while I was up there, I sat down to speak with Bard president Leon Botstein, who spearheaded the project and serves as music director. You just heard an excerpt of Botstein conducting TONE in Rimsky-Korsakov's Russian Easter Festival Overture at this year's Bard Festival. With less than a half hour to curtain time, Botstein was still very eager to speak about how Tone has begun to fulfill its mission and the ways in which it can still grow.
Some of the original assumptions turned out to be right. So, for example, the reservoir of talented young people. So it was always presumed that one of the problems classical music as an industry faces is that there seems to be an inextinguishable enthusiasm among a new generation of people to learn to play instruments really well. So let's call it the technical, almost athletic thrill of playing the violin, the French horn, percussion, whatever it is, very, very well. So the standard of play in classical music has continued to become better and better and better. The irony is that we don't see as much in the United States, particularly, and in Europe, I would say, we don't see as much growth in the audience. That the problem is that there are more and more people that want to play, and how do we find audiences and ways of communicating with them? You know, there was the golden age of radio, and then there was even television, you know, where people like Leonard Bernstein, or there were broadcasts, and NBC had an orchestra, and so, and there were, the recording was profitable. I mean, there were ways in which this was sustained through the 20th century, but in the 21st century, the situation has collapsed. So now you have an immense access through YouTube, Spotify, and all this, to little snapshots. So it's as if you can visit St. Peter's Basilica, but it's half a page in a black and white or maybe a color photograph. But someone would think you're crazy if you said, well, I visited St. Peter's. Even I can have a virtual tour on the internet that's created where I can walk through St. That's not, you haven't visited St. Peter's, right? Any more than you've seen the Mediterranean. And that's true of art history. Art history has known that a long time, architectural history. So although the resources on some very limited level have increased, the audience for live music needs to be rebuilt. And the rebuilding of that has one advantage in our technological age, because in my opinion, people don't want to hear a tinny sound through their machine. Actually, and they don't even want to hear high fidelity with big speakers. They want to actually hear people play live. So one of the purposes of the program is actually to train musicians to figure out how to create their own audiences, how to go about thinking, well, what do I have that I can communicate and to whom do I wish to communicate? And it can be all kinds of kids, people who don't usually go to classical music. It can be the traditional audience, it can be older people, it can be children, through schools, out of school. There are many, many different ways, through churches, through synagogues, through communal organizations. There are an endless possibility of avenues. So we've proved that there are people out there who want to be musicians and want to communicate their art. And part of their art will be new music, which is great, of all kinds, crossover, but also the history of music. And that's the second sort of big goal that we had, which was, so all of our players have been through conservatory training on the BA and some master's, some even doctoral levels, which means they have an extremely good training in what we call the standard repertory. You know, every violinist knows the Paganini Caprices, the Beethoven Sonatas, the Brahms Sonatas. You know, that player has that in the repertory. But one of the sad and odd things about classical music is that over the last 30 or 40 years, the standard repertory has narrowed. The historical representation has narrowed, which means that if you pick up a random program from a major orchestra in the United States from 1940 and 50, you'll see a much more Catholic programming. And a larger part of the historical past is represented. And so this is particularly true in the opera house, which has become even more conservative. Yes, new operas are done, but they're done once. Very few of them actually become part of the repertory. And it's nice to do an opera, and that they should. There's no conflict between the support of contemporary music, and quite the opposite. The way we tell the story of our past influences how we behave in the present and how we foresee the future, or how we think we can influence the future. So one of our tasks is to write the history of music truthfully. So we do works that these players never encountered during their training. orchestral works, and they have discovered that there is, for them, a huge buried treasure out there. They don't have to try to compete with every single other flutist playing this repertoire, or every violinist or cellist playing the same repertoire. They don't have to run up against Casals, Yo-Yo Ma, everybody playing the Bach suites. There's other stuff to play, both solo repertory and repertory with ensemble, with large ensemble. So I think we are trying to educate them through the study of allied fields, to show that music is part of a cultural fabric. And in that cultural fabric, through music, you can get links outward, but from outward things, art, you can find your way into music. So that's been very successful. The one thing that actually is very problematic is that among the ills that classical music as an industry suffers is a winnowing out of patronage. So when classical music was politically and socially important in high society or civic cultures, people who really didn't care about music supported musical institutions. So in Chicago or Detroit or Atlanta or whatever city you want to mention, that isn't the case anymore. The naming gift for the home of the New York Philharmonic was given by a person who lives in California, not a New Yorker. And by all accounts, it's not been easy for them to raise the money they need. The same is true of the Met. Now, the Met was always a national opera company in a way. It remains America's opera house. But the New York Philharmonic has competition from many, many other orchestras. So with the reduction in prestige of classical music as a civic symbol, the patronage is much harder. One of the advantages of tone is that it has an educational mission, and therefore it can attract a wider, we're very grateful to the Mellon Foundation for helping it get started, and for other donors who were interested less so in the performance function than in the educational function. Answering the question, how are we going to train the next generation of professional musicians?
Well, you mentioned that part of the goal is to help or encourage the musicians to find, create, develop their own audience. What have been some examples that stand out in the past few years of the way they've approached the capstone or the...
Well, there are several things. First of all, they formed ensembles of their own. They each have to do a capstone project, and those capstone projects do everything from teaching and bringing music to different kinds of venues to putting together ensembles and mixing music up. So they'll do music, for example, allied to causes, I say, the disaster in Puerto Rico, and then that's an opening to look at Latin American music and Puerto Rican music, and then there's a mixture of popular and classic concert music. So it's both subject matter and new audiences. The other thing is that they've spent a lot of time learning how to talk to the audience. So crucial in the explosion of music as a entertainment and as an art form that people learn in the 19th century was reading about music. Very important were magazines that were written about music. There were keyboard magazines, and there were high fidelity magazines, and so people read about music, and that's how we have the program note. People like to read about it, the way they would read about art history. Now, there is the possibility of using the internet. You know, people have websites, and they have various kinds of communicative devices they can develop to develop a virtual audience, but also they go out in the hall. For example, at every concert of our own, in intermission, they greet the audience. They go out and they introduce themselves and say, "Hi, I'm Susan Jones, and I play clarinet." They essentially, because one thing that we've lost is now, if you buy a ticket to a concert, maybe you'll go with someone, but the likelihood that you'll know the person next to you. In the old subscription system, there was a community. Saturday night, you didn't care who was being played, but you're going to see Mr. and Mrs. So, and Helen this, and Robert that, and you're going to meet these people, and there's a kind of community, the way you would go to church, or you would go to a meeting of your local community, something like that. That has gone. So you go to a concert, you don't know anybody. Now, One way to interact that is to try to find ways to make the social activity of going to a concert interesting. In other words, where you can meet people. And we're experimenting. We, you know, it's very early. New programs rarely work because of the original reason you started them. It's like finding, you're looking for a drug that will cure something or reduce a certain symptom. It's okay, it works out. But then somebody figures out that it can be used for something that it wasn't approved for, off-label use, you know. The most famous example is Viagra, which was really developed as a post-operative medication in open heart surgery. You know, that's an extreme case. But so a good program usually ends up being successful, not always for the original premise. And I think we're in the fourth year. We haven't developed any fixed, you know, convictions beyond the sort of basic idea. The other great thing is that we've been very much heartened by the response from the musical community. So, you know, Leonard Slatkin is coming to conduct, Fabio Luisi, we've had Joan Folletta, Nemi Jarvi, yeah. I'm trying to think who, Jerry Schwartz. So people who are, you know, have established careers have expressed real interest in conducting the orchestra. Tan Dunn, the composer. And so that's very heartening.
That was Leonard Botstein, president of Bard College and music director of the Orchestra Now. I also had a chance to speak with four of the musicians from the Orchestra Now, or Toners, about their experiences. Oboist Gigi Brady, who is going into her second year of the program. Leonardo Pineda, a violinist from Venezuela who is starting his third year. Andres Rivas, also from Venezuela, who, while he did not study in the Tone program, received his graduate degree in conducting from Bard and serves as assistant conductor of Tone and the Bard Conservatory Orchestra, and flutist Matt Ross, who is beginning his second year with Tone.
The orchestra allows us so much experience to play, you know, a program almost every week, and that's just, it's just like so great for us to build our chops. And at the same time, it's also cultivating this group of musicians who's interested not only in performing rep each week, but thinking about the challenges that the modern day orchestra faces. And, you know, I don't think that any of us have come up with the solutions to, you know, fix all of these problems, but I think obviously starting to think about how we might address those problems is a pretty good first step.
I think for me it was the combination of performing and programming with the idea of highlighting concepts, you know. So that playing in the orchestra, playing in a group, which is what I did in Venezuela, just playing in orchestra and working on a group performance. And, you know, just also the classes that we have here at Tone are very important for creating your own thing in a way. So it's really great to come up with ideas and talk to people that have done it already.
Well, for me, before I got into Tone, I didn't know what the Orchestra Now was going to be about. I just knew that I wanted to keep, you know, making music, playing good stuff with Maestro Leon, as we also did in Venezuela, in El Sistema.
Before I came to this program, I was just freelancing around New York. I finished my first master's in 2016. So I had a year before I came here, and I kind of realized that I really love playing in orchestra. And most of my freelancing in New York was not playing in orchestra. It was all kinds of odd jobs, odd gigs, whatever came up. So when I heard about this, and I was still in such close proximity to New York, so I can maintain my contacts there, but at the same time, I had a full-time orchestra job, essentially. It just seemed like the right thing to do for me.
So once you got here, I was hoping you could each kind of describe a little bit about what made this program unique. What would you say, like an average semester, or what would be the highlight of a particular semester?
Well, we usually perform masterpieces that are not well known out there. You know, Maestro Botstein's idea is always to have us know old new music, what he called old new music. And I think that's very important for us to learn.
Well, the other thing is that this repertoire is often connected. So it's quite amazing. Sometimes it takes a little time to connect the pieces, but somehow they're connected and highlighting. Maybe a composer has, for example, we're doing Korsakov and his world for the festival, but many times, you know, we also do concert talks for the concerts, which is something scary, you know, to stand up in front of your colleagues and talk to the audience about a particular piece, you know. And I did it last year, and the rep was connected. The composer, he has something, you know, it's always highlighting an idea.
Right, and I think that we're sort of starting with this premise that we're not just stepping on stage each week, you know, playing down the program and leaving. You know, we're trying to convey a message or an argument or a point to the audience, and, you know, both with our playing, but, you know, like Leo was saying, you know, people will speak before almost every piece and try to make those connections obvious, and we'll go out into the lobby during intermission to try to connect with audience members on an individual level and really be personally involved in the concert experience.
Yeah, and I found it interesting, kind of going along those same lines, how interested people were in this rather unusual rep. Because even from my perspective, looking through the list of everything we're going to be playing for the next season, or for last season even, there were a lot of things I was very unfamiliar with, which, as classical musicians, it doesn't happen much when you're taking sub-jobs in orchestras. It's usually the standard fare. So it's kind of hard to gauge how an audience is going to react. But generally, since we end up having such a connection to these pieces through our research and all that kind of stuff, it comes across to the audience as well, and they end up really enjoying it.
Yes, you alluded to one of the major projects or centerpieces is your third year independent project. I want to get a sense of what that's going to encompass for each of you.
So a group of friends, colleagues from the Orchestra Now and the Conservatory, for my capstone project, we put this program together in Cali, Colombia. So we're going to go there. And we wanted to combine ideas of inclusion from El Sistema and artistic ideas of programming from BARD and the Orchestra Now and the festival. So we're going to go to different schools to teach there, but we also program several concerts for chamber music around Piazzolla, who was an Argentinian composer. So we're doing composers around, you know, that are connected to Piazzolla. So his teachers, you know, we're doing Ginastera, and we are also connecting it to Colombian composers. So that's my capstone project for my third year.
Now, you two have a year to go before you need to commit to something. Do you have ideas of kind of what you'd like to explore?
So many ideas. Right now, I'm kind of trying to figure out how, in the grand scheme of things, I can maintain some sort of solo chamber music career with an orchestral career, because I do love solo playing and I love chamber music. There are a lot of works by living American composers that are phenomenal, and not necessarily even written that recently for flute and piano or flute and some other sort of ensemble, that have not gotten recorded yet. So I would like to figure out some combination of pieces that would make sense and put together a living American composer's album of flute music.
Yeah, I don't know. As you know, some people have you know, sort of curated their own more intimate concert of solo, rap, or chamber music, and some people have, you know, written, you know, substantial research papers. And something that we did in our first year seminar just this past year was we each picked a sort of initiative that an orchestra or an ensemble had taken to sort of increase their level of audience engagement. And so I sort of found, you know, touching upon the fringes of that area really interesting. So maybe something along those lines.
One of the other aspects of this is the community engagement and the reaching out. What are some ways that you've maybe started to think a little bit differently about music and your role as a musician?
I think the biggest thing for me has just been how to talk to a quote-unquote musically illiterate audience. So not obviously not everyone who shows up to the concerts is going to be at all trained in music, but learning how to just have a conversation about these pieces in very broad terms, but specific enough that it makes sense for a specific piece. It's not something you learn in music conservatory because you're surrounded all by people who do know and you can get into the nitty-gritty with it. But how do you engage someone who doesn't know as much?
Right. Along those lines, you know, Bard also has a relationship with a number of prisons in the area, and something that was really fascinating and new to me was to go into some of these prisons, both as an orchestra or a small chamber ensemble, and play and really interact with some of the people there. And that was just different and new and, you know, really rewarding for all of us, I think.
The best audience.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The best audience. The more enthusiastic, I would say. Well, I have been at Bard for a while because I did my undergrad here. So I take conducting lessons as well. You know, I've been around for a while. So I feel very comfortable. I left for a year and then I came back for town. I still know a lot of people around.
And from your perspective as you know, assistant conductor, what are some things that you've seen about how musicians and ensembles can interact differently with the community and find different ways to present music and interact?
Well, I guess it depends on the piece we perform, right? Because some pieces like Strauss or Mahler are too deep and too profound for some people. So that's the idea of this program, that we combine different pieces for all kind of audiences, you know, kids, old people, any type of people that love classical music can come to our concerts and understand what this program is about.
That was my conversation earlier this month with oboist Gigi Brady, violinist Leonardo Pineda, and flutist Matt Ross, all participants in Bard College's The Orchestra Now program, and tone assistant conductor Andres Rivas. You can hear more excerpts from my conversations with the students and Botstein at the A Tempo page of our website at wwfm.org. The 2018-2019 season begins at the Basilica Soundscape Music and Art Festival next month. More information on Tone and its upcoming season can be found at theorchestranow.org or bard.edu/theorcnow. And beginning this fall, you can hear performances of The Orchestra Now as part of the Classical Network series celebrating our musical future on Monday nights. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges of the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.